Hello, fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 1420, the Watch Cooker Podcast, with your hosts, Andrew, and my good friend, Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
I'm all right.
I'm good. I'm busy. I'm
everything felt a little awkward tonight. I just sort of jumped in and I pressed record. And
I was not ready.
Yeah, we just went hard in the paint.
We did.
Fast break. Yeah, full court press.
Yeah, fast break offense sometimes is a little bit chunky, but you do what feels right. It was better than that because it did end with a two-handed jam.
Here we are once again. Andrew, I'm doing all right. The sun was shining today. Mm-hmm. I had a baseball game. Both of my kids had three hits. Holy crap. It was like baseball in the sunshine and they're getting hits and I'm chewing barbecue sunflower seeds. And I was like,
barbecue?
Yeah, they're not my favorite, but those were the ones that we had. And okay. I was like, yeah, this will work.
You're better than that.
I like the dill pickle.
Everyone likes the dill pickle. Dill pickle is the flavor.
That's the go-to, man. I have some, they're like... spicy dill pickle, mm-hmm. like the Cholula dill pickle. That's good. That's good. It's like it's a little hot, but also kind of that astringent.
Ooh, you know what would be good? The dill pickle spits, but just open that up and sprinkle it with like half a bottle of tahini.
Yeah, or maybe some like chili lime, something mm-hmm. or the other. Yeah.
Some custom dill pickle spits flavors.
But yeah, you know, the lawn is looking great. It's like we're full on like mid to late spring, getting it. Sun's coming out.
It's gonna be 80 degrees tomorrow.
80 degrees. I got a tea time on Friday morning, and it's supposed to be like 70 at 9:30.
Yeah,
like let's go.
I would like to have a tea time on Friday morning
at the country club. Gosh, which is nice.
That would have been a cool invite.
Yeah, well, I'm not a member, so I don't get to invite people. Yeah, Andrew, how are you?
I am also good. I am, as much as I'm enjoying seeing the sunshine, the freaking tree pollen is killing me. Our count today, like every day they show it on the news, it's like, oh, grass pollen's fine. Tree pollen will kill you. Just a heads up, if you go outside, you will die. So, I'm suffering a little bit through that. This has been one of my... like more impactful allergy seasons. And I don't know why. It's never like, this isn't unusually bad. This is pretty normal, but this year they're just getting me.
Yeah. I've been, I never really deal with allergies too bad, but I've definitely had a little phlegmy.
Mm-hmm.
A little phlegmy.
Yeah. A little stuffed up, a little phlegmy. I did find out. So my office is on the fourth floor of a building. We have rats.
Nice.
Which is really surprising to me that the fourth floor would get rats.
You know, they're industrious. They're moving on up to the east side.
But what are they eating? There's not food.
You know,
so
really hard to say.
The facilities person came up and was
addressing the mice.
Was maybe or the cats, I don't know, but the facilities person came up to do some cleanup of the remnants that was already clean. I don't know what, it doesn't matter. This facilities lady is like, yeah, got her backpack vacuum on. It's like, yeah, we call them roof rats. And I was
yeah,
like,
you do.
Okay.
Yeah, you do.
You do call them roof rats. So what's the fix here? So now there's like rat traps.
Just everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere.
Just tiptoeing like around.
A little hazardous. Yeah. So
are they the sticky ones?
No, they're snap traps.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So we're gonna find some dead rats
about. Oh boy. You know, I used to be a landlord. We had a house in Springfield, Oregon, and when we had some tenants. They were terrible tenants. We knew they were terrible tenants. And when they left, I got into the house and there was, I don't know. You could just tell. You could smell mice, and they just let them go crazy. And I went to Bi-Mart, and I bought like 10 mouse traps, like the 5-packs, and a jar of peanut butter. And you know, we're cleaning the house like as we go. But I'd gone to Bi-Mart, gotten a bunch of mouse traps, smeared them with peanut butter, set them all up, and before I could get through the house setting them up, I was hearing them snap.
Ooh. That's a lot of mice.
It was like, I don't know, I think in the first 12 hours, it was like 15 to 20 mice.
Yeah, because you have one, you have 10.
And they were like, they were on the take too. They were like, let's do this. Peanut butter is my favorite.
It's almost like they were domestic mice that were just cut loose when they moved out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they were very comfortable and out and about. Yeah, it was nuts.
In a house of that age, it's pretty normal to have some kind of infestation is not right, but intrusion, I think, is maybe the right word for it. Like, you're gonna get some rodent exploration.
Oh yeah.
But like a colony in the house, no, that's problematic.
It was bad. You know, we had lived there for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years before we started renting it, and we had had the occasional mouse. You know, we'd know, oh, we got some mice, and so we'd set out traps, and then they'd be fine. But these folks had not and made any effort.
They probably just had a loose snake.
Yeah, hard to say.
In the house, they weren't like, oh, we don't have to feed it. We have these mice. That, instead of getting a cat like a normal person, or better still, I don't know, cleaning up and setting some traps. They just had a loose snake.
Yeah, they were
milling around.
They were pretty dirty. They were not the neatest people.
They definitely had a snake.
In any event, Andrew, we're not here to talk about mice or roof rats. Or anything of the sort. No rodents today.
No critters.
In fact, I don't think any rodents at all. Rather, we're here to talk about watches. We've got a fun... I'm actually kind of excited for this week. There's a few watches that were announced this last week that I'm like, yes, please. Yes, please. You know, some stuff. At least one watch that I'm like, fucking finally. So I'm wondering if we could just get right into it. If you could pick one from your list and we could talk about it. And do the thing we do and talk about watches.
I have one more thing to say about our favorite cat.
Which one is our favorite?
Sylvester.
Okay.
But this one's the human version of Sylvester in the way of Stallone. He's sending some watches to Sotheby's to auction.
He needs the money.
You know, that wouldn't shock me. I've seen several short videos of him, reels, more appropriately, of him doing like kind of a walkthrough of all of his shit. And he is looking rough. He's still yoked. Like, he's still looking bigger than he was in his actual physical prime. You know, the steroids are doing it. And so he's got 11 watches going to auction. Most of them are your typical, oh, I've got some money to throw around, I'm going to buy some watches. I did learn about his introduction into like, oh, I want a cool watch, which was seeing Greg Allman asleep with his arm dangling, wearing a gold Rolex and looking at it like, man, I got some money. I could be a baller too.
I had to go get Greg Allman's Rolex.
So he started buying some watches. And as rich people do, they have a lot of rich people shit. You know, he's got some Nautilus, but he had two watches that like actually kind of intrigued me. This won't be surprising to you that Sylvester Stallone really likes Panerai.
Well, didn't Sylvester Stallone put Panerai on the map, basically? I mean, obviously not, but didn't he sort of like...
Yes. So he's got a bunch of Panerai going, but he's got two watches that really intrigued me. The first is the Patek Philippe Grandmaster Chime 6300G-010. And this is a watch that was specifically created for a charity auction. There were a few of them made. The first one went, and this is now the first time of that run of watches that one is going to market. And it is just gorgeous. 20 complications, 5 chiming mechanisms. Like, this is not the watch that I would expect Sylvester Stallone to own or wear. I don't think he ever wore it because there's photographs of it still in plastic.
Yeah.
But he did have it. So this is now the first one of these that's going to auction. Fun fact, the first one that went at auction went for 31 million francs.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is going to fetch a penny.
Yeah, Time and Tide has this estimated, well, I don't know if this is Time and Tide's estimate or Sotheby's estimate, but 2.5 to 5 million. But from what I saw, this looks like it's maybe going to go for more than that.
I think so, because it looks brand new, like never even touched. Still got the rubber on it. I mean, the plastic on it. The other one that intrigued me is a Nautilus, but it is an interesting Nautilus. It is the Nautilus 5711-300A-001. It is his green 5711 with baguette diamond set bezel.
Mm.
Another one that didn't really fit. And he, you know, he's been seen wearing this watch numerous times, but it just doesn't quite seem still like just Stallone enough to me. The Nautilus, the all steel Nautilus, totally get, but with the diamond set bezel, this seemed like a Tom Brady watch or like a Tiger Woods watch,
mm-hmm.
not Stallone watch to me. This one's also gonna get some money, you know. I think it's Sotheby's estimates, because they release, they're like, hey, this is, you know, where we're gonna start. This is how much we expect it to fetch. They're anticipating between 200,000 and 400,000 for this, which, you know, that kind of tracks. Never mind that it's a diamond set 5711, but it's slides.
Yeah, I gotta think. I also think that's low for this. I mean, I think this watch is gonna go for probably closer to 500. I don't know. Shit, I don't know. But I would just be shocked for this thing to go for 200. There's no fucking chance.
That lovely green.
He's also got a blue 5711 in this.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is piece unique at all. It's just like, oh, this is Stallone's.
It's just slides, and it's gonna go for 5711 money. Oh, and he had the Piaget Polo. Another one like that.
Yeah, it's like an OG Piaget.
But that one kind of makes sense, given like when he made his money. That one kind of makes sense. This one strikes me as like one of his early acquisitions.
I think this isn't like a 70s Polo. I mean, this is, I think, like a 2000s Polo. So it's
like what I think of like the first time when he's actually collecting watches, he remembered the Polo,
yeah,
and was like, ooh, that was cool when I was cool.
Yeah.
Like during his lull, when he still had some money and he was like spending it, like it was going out of style. Like he was,
you know, this is, yeah, these estimates are crazy. This is 6,000 to 12,000 for a solid gold Polo, 38 Polo. I mean, this thing's going to go.
This one's going to go for 30.
Yeah. So these estimates are crazy, though. That's fun.
Yeah. So it's an interesting person to be sending a pretty good lot of watches to Sotheby's.
Andrew.
Yeah.
Swatch. Have you heard of that company?
Oh, are they the ones who make the Speedmaster?
That's, yeah, that one. They also have a line of plastic watches, really rose to prominence in the 80s, all but forgotten. Swatch just released, six neon watches. And these are like
the OG shit.
OG, yeah. Super duper Swatch. 37 millimeter, super color, 1990s watches. These things are dope, man.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these are, and they're like in the Grand Prix. Some of them are in the Grand Prix. Some of them are just regular three-handers. They all have just exactly what you'd expect. If you were to go back in time, if you were to like make a movie set in 1991, and outfit the cast with Swatch watches, these are the watches that you would, in your mind's eye, put on these people's
These
wrists.
Were on Saved by the Bell. Every single one of these watches, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's right.
Screech owned this entire line.
And so they released this Neon collection last year. I think these are sort of like a second version of these, but these more so, I think these more so than last year's releases are like bang on. So I think they've got them in 34 and 37, tons of different colors.
42 and 47.
Oh, excuse me.
And 34. So three sizes.
And they're all like affordable. They're starting at what, $90,
mm-hmm.
and then up to, you know, 180 what, euros for the more complicated, the Grand Prix chronographs. Come on,
these are cool.
Come on. I'm into it. I like all of these. There's not, so they're Swatch watches, you guys. There's not a lot to say about these, but they're dope.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, I tried on a 34 millimeter Swatch recently and I was like, I think that is just a touch too small for me.
It's also because of the material. If it was heavier, if it was steel, I think mm-hmm. it'd work, but because these are all plastic, they're just nothing.
But tons of different sizes on these. Good prices. But the first comment, I'm looking at a Fratello article, and Stefan says, you know, if a police officer catches you wearing one of these, you'll be escorted back to school. It's true.
Yeah. That lands it.
You know, It's cool. I like the fact that Swatch is like staying true, right? They're not releasing these things at, you know, $300-$400. They're like, no, this is a Swatch watch. And of course,
this is the Swatch watch.
Of course, you know, Swatches were probably in the 90s, $25 or $35. Mm-hmm. And so of course we're more expensive than that, but we're still like for the three handers, we're in that $75 to $100 range, which is affordable.
That's consistent with inflation.
This is affordable.
Yeah, that fits. That works. This like black with orange dial, green case. The design on these is just phenomenal.
So that is the,
what are they calling that?
Rider SO29G106. That is $90, 41 millimeter, matte green biosourced material on the case.
If it's biosourced, I'm not interested anymore.
It's inspired by the original model from 1989.
Yeah.
Mix of black, yellow, orange, and a bit of blue.
Where's the blue? It's on the second hand. Yep, yeah. There it is.
Yep.
Very bit of blue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a cool watch. These are all cool, man.
I got another auction to talk about.
Do me.
John Jacob Astor's $1.17 million, so $8. it feels good to be able to make fun of the pound. I recently saw the exchange rate and was like, oh, look at that. The dollar isn't in the shithole anymore, at least as bad as the pound. It could have changed like over the course of today, but
the dollar's fine. The pound is in the shithouse.
Yeah, it's not doing great.
Sorry, English folks.
Yeah. Invest in the dollar. Shouldn't have left the gold standard though. Anyhow, John Jacob Astor's $1.17 million Titanic watch.
Never heard of him.
As well, you shouldn't have, because he's dead. And he died some time ago. So John Jacob Astor, for those of you who don't know, want just a brief history lesson. He was the wealthiest man to be aboard the Titanic. He was one of the wealthiest men in the world at the time. His net worth converted to inflation is something like $2.5 billion in current money. So, you know, he got a little bit of scratch.
Built the Waldorf Astoria. Yeah. Also one of the key members of the founding of Astoria, Oregon.
Yes.
Which is just up the street from us, and also where they shot Goonies.
Yes. So lots of things. This becomes the most expensive piece of memorabilia sold at auction related to the Titanic. It beats the famous violin that was auctioned 10 years ago that was being played by a violinist while they were sinking. And it's interesting because it's an American-made pocket watch that's just so simple. It's a 14-karat gold case, simple, monogrammed initials on the cover, in beautiful condition, and it is beautiful. Like, looking at pictures of this, I was like, man, I think I want some pocket watches. I just don't have occasion to wear them. And then I was like, well, you could make occasion to wear them and just start wearing them. Just totally reinvent myself as a vest wearing fuck.
Yeah, you can go get a fedora.
I don't think you could do a fedora.
Yeah, and you can't do a fucking pocket watch either.
But I want to. This thing is beautiful.
It is gorgeous. It's a really, really attractive watch.
$1.17 million for that auction piece. Just a cool story of like a collision of history and watchmaking and American watchmaking, making some money.
Yeah, you know, it's really not a...
It's not a $1 million watch, I'll tell you that.
It's, well, and it's not even all that impressive. I mean, it's a beautiful watch. The engraving of the JJA on the front is probably some of the most beautiful engraving I've ever seen. Both in terms of its simplicity and
its intricacy and like,
but yeah, like its intricate simplicity. It's just really well done and really tasteful. But this isn't a crazy watch. There's nothing about this thing that you're like, woof, except that it was the watch that John Jacob Astor wore when he died on the Titanic.
Yeah, and was discovered floating in the water a week later.
Sorry, John.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, John.
Yeah. It's been, oh gosh, it's lovely.
Andrew, I'm worried about time. I'm not worried about time. We've got all the time we want.
This is our show.
We could just do a marathon.
Yeah. I don't have to be at work until whenever I want.
But I'm also worried because you have this watch on your list. And so I thought I'd just sneak it in.
Oh, you would.
I feel like this watch is mine.
You motherfucker.
So a handful of years ago, we talked about plastic watches. Do you remember this episode?
No.
And I was like, well, the Tag Heuer Formula One is the best plastic watch ever made. And I have spent the better part of the last 4 years sort of casually looking for a really good condition Tag Heuer Formula One, a plastic or resin cased Formula One. I haven't located one. I have informally purchased it. I have not taken possession of it. And then just this week,
That was almost like some insider trading happened.
Just this week, Tag Heuer announced a collaboration with a brand called Keith.
I don't know.
Do you know anything about this brand?
Never seen it. I thought they misspelled a word.
Keith. Is that the stuff? Is that like the crystal that you get off of the buds, the cannabis buds when you, the Keith?
I think that's what people with a lisp refer to what they use to open a door.
Give me the Keith. A Tag brought back the Formula One, the resin case Formula One.
Did. And they brought it back as good as you could have ever imagined.
Yeah, they did it right. These are 35 millimeters, so they're not too big. They are Tag Heuer. They come in every color you can want, 10 different colors, 12/6/9 markers in the shield format. They've got both like kind of wild and also kind of subdued. I mean, none of these are subdued. Dude.
No, I don't know. The silver with blue bezel is, that could be a steel sport watch.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Come on. Come on. These are terrific.
Do you know what one like really gets me going and I could see myself owning?
Tell me.
The yellow case, green bezel, blue dial.
Yeah, that's, I think that's probably my favorite of all of these.
Yeah, it is super fun and it just perfectly fits that plastic sport diver feel.
So these are same size. Some of these are, we've got some PVD steel, we've got some fiberglass has been replaced. We've got 9.45 thick, which is terrific. Lug to lug of 40. The size is going to be super wearable. We got 200 meters of water resistance. Thank you, Tag Heuer. Some of these come on blast bracelets. Some of them come on straps. You've got all the colors that you could want. I think that the only problem anybody might have with these is the pricing.
Yeah.
So we are at what, $1,500 for the bulk of the collection. There is the 18,000 limited edition, which is the Tag Heuer Formula One Ronnie Feig collection. Oh, that's all 10.
It's the all of them, yeah.
That's the all 10. They're making 75 of those. Yeah, I mean, well, I guess it's only
a little extra to get a case.
I mean, I don't know. It doesn't matter because these are just terrific. A little bit expensive, but not crazy.
You know what though? These are like 90s, 2000s Tag expensive, right? This is what put Tag in the shitter for a lot of people is $1,500 to $3,000 quartz watches. And I think a little bit of this is like kind of a fuck you. Like, yeah, we did it. We'll do it again. And we're going to keep doing cool shit. This is also better than the first round.
I think given the release of the Blancpain Swatch collaboration and the Omega Swatch collaboration, I think the price on these is a little, it's like, it kind of puts a point on how this price is a little bit inflated. But fuck it. If you want one, go get one because they're fucking great. That blue dial, yellow case, green bezel, red strap.
This is that they are sandblasted steel or PVD steel.
On the case?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are some steel cases, but are they all PVD steel on this?
Or sandblasted.
Well, there you go.
Well,
with a resin bezel.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That changes a little bit.
I mean, I guess. It's still a lot of money, but... Whatever, I'm not complaining. $1,500.
That yellow case, though, man, that's so fun.
Yeah.
That's as fun as the Swatch. And I think I would enjoy this more than the Swatch.
Yeah. I think these are terrific.
I lament that you slurp my pick, but whatever.
There is one thing that I'm sort of like, meh. The text at 6 o'clock is just us, which is some sort of Formula One friends and family thing. I don't know. I didn't really get.
It's because no one else is invited. There's so much money in Formula One that you're not invited. So I was in Vegas about a month before the Formula One races happened. And it was right at that sweet spot when they realized that they were not going to be able to meet their sales needs.
What does that mean?
Like in terms of
ticket sales?
Ticket sales and room sales and just bookings in general. We were offered like multi-day race tickets, room stays, things that were, you know, $15,000 a week before for
in exchange for what did you have to do?
pay them $100 a day. They were like, hey, we're running this special right now. This deal costs this much usually. You want to buy it for $500? And it wasn't from like a scalper on the street. It was like everywhere you go. It's like, hey, we got this deal.
Why didn't you do it?
Because I would have had to convince my wife to let me go back to Las Vegas a month later.
But you should have just called me and we could have convinced our wives together.
Well, let's just go next year. The pricing model has balanced itself out because they realize that there's not the U.S. market for it, that there is other places. But
have you ever been to a NASCAR event?
No, I really want to.
You know, it's one of those things that it's like I just have no context for understanding it or having an appreciation for it or even a desire to go. But there's this like small kernel heating up that I'm like, I just got to go do it.
I think so. And I really like watching motorsports on television. I just don't have a super strong desire to go to the American South in the sweltering heat and sit at a raceway all day, even drunk. I
have literally never watched any automotive racing event on TV or live, except for when I was a little kid and I went to Portland Speedway with my dad.
When I turn on the TV and I'm scrolling on like a Saturday or Sunday and I get to control the remote and I see racing on, I don't go to Netflix. I really like watching motorsports. I don't like it as much as I like watching golf.
I did go see that Gran Turismo movie and it was terrific.
I didn't see that yet.
I liked it. We took the kids and we watched it in the theater.
But motorsports are fun to watch. And I think a lot of people don't have an appreciation for the amount of athleticism that the drivers have. Or skill. Maybe athleticism isn't the right word, but I think I'm going to use athleticism.
I think
because it's
both.
It's, yeah. I like watching it. It's a really long game of strategy and I like watching it, but let's plan to go to Vegas for the F1 races next year.
Okay.
They're in November.
Meet us there. We'll record live from the track.
We will record live from the Las Vegas F1.
I make no promises about that.
I super can't promise that my wife will be good with it. But if I get enough people to agree to go with me and be like, all my friends are going, you can't just say no.
Andrew, you know, if I say to Kim, hey, Andrew wants to go to the F1, it's not going to be super expensive, we're going, she'll be like, okay. And if you say the same, Everett wants to go to the F1. He's invited me. It's not going to be super expensive. I want to go. She'll be like, okay. And then they'll both think that we're just joining our good friend to do this thing that the good friend wanted to do. And then we'll be in the clear.
That's not a terrible idea.
They don't listen to the show.
Not anymore. They did early, like maybe the first six.
They don't listen to the show. Don't tell them. Listen, you. Yeah, yeah, you.
Yeah, rats. Yeah.
Don't fucking tell them.
Fucking roof rats. Filling our business.
We call them roof rats.
Yeah. It's Andrew, not as mean as sewer rat.
What's next?
Okay, so I saw an article and it caught just the title caught my attention, and then I read the article and it kind of lost me. The Indian watch company Bangalore sent a watch into space and it survived and it's available too. And I was like that watch or the line? So I read the article. Turns out it's a line. They space tested it. And this is kind of a thing right now is companies are trying to create some relationships with any of the 2,000 companies involved in the commercial space race. And they're getting their shit sent to space. And they're doing low altitude flights, like Karman line flights. They're doing a whole watch just went to the moon on that lander, didn't it?
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
Yeah. So watches and space travel are forever intertwined. You know, that's just a thing because watches are an instrument and have been involved in space flight since the beginning. And now with our second iteration of the human space race truly hitting stride, I don't think most people really appreciate the excitement of the space race that we're living in right now, which is kind of sad because in the 60s it was like it was the thing. And now it's just kind of happening in the periphery, even though we're seeing it happen. Like there's a launch this weekend. Tuesday's
yeah.
launch
yeah.
got scrubbed.
Yep.
Or Monday's launch. Was it Monday or Tuesday?
It's early this week. Got scrubbed.
Yeah, Monday or Tuesday we had a scrub. I was watching instead of working. And they're like, all right, we're calling it. And I was like, you fucking assholes. No, don't do that. Now I have to go back to work. So they scrubbed their launch. There's another one going. So anyway, Bangalore, it's I don't know if we've talked about Bangalore before.
We have, yeah. So there was the cricket
watch. Oh, yeah, it was the cricket watch that we've talked about. And Bangalore has been featured on the website at least once, probably more than that. So they sent a watch on a, what company? It doesn't matter. They sent their watch with one of these private companies who is a part of the civilian sector space race up above the Karman line, came back down. It's still working. And the watch they sent up is the Apogee. It was one of the Apogee collection. Oh, gosh. I wish I could remember things.
Yeah, I wish you could remember things, too. I'm trying to catch up with you here. I'm still looking for the name of the company.
Oh, so they sent it up on an ultralight carbon fiber spacecraft hoisted by a balloon. So what it sounds like is they did just the same thing as the Red Bull guy who just like rode a balloon.
Right, Felix Baumgartner.
Up, you know, 114,000 feet.
This is the Apogee Karman line, which is Karman, K-A-R-M-A-N, who's a physicist.
Yeah, so and so the Karman line is this sort of like generally accepted but really ambiguous line between our atmosphere and space. There's no way really to determine exactly where it is, so they just said 100,000 kilometers.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's like good. That's yeah. close enough.
Yeah, 100,000 K.
Yeah, or feet? Where 100,000 something.
Yeah, probably not kilometers.
Yeah, it's probably
not. That's a lot of kilometers.
Yeah, that's many. I think it's 100,000 feet is the generally accepted. You're in space. 35 kilometers. So yeah, 100,000 feet ish. Doesn't matter. Anyway, so this watch is a twin stick internal rotating bezel, really lovely blue and purple meteorite dial. It's cool. And I like seeing watch companies fighting for their piece of it in a way that they either couldn't because they didn't exist. But in the 60s, when we see Omega, Bulova fighting for this contract, there were really stringent metrics that watches had to meet in order to be even considered. And now with this prolific civilian space race, it's like, hey, will you send my thing up too? I'll pay you a little bit of money. And they're like, yeah, we got space. Put it on. So seeing that, like, that democratization of accessibility to the space race and to get their for companies like Bangalore to even have a fighting chance for it or to have just a piece of it, even if they're not fighting for, you know, to be the Indian Space Agency's official watch, but that they get to be a part of the conversation is super fucking cool. So blue PVD coated dial, applied markers, Le Jupere G100 movement, only 50 pieces available. They're going to be about $3,000. 40 millimeter case, 12 millimeters thick, 44 lug to lug. So a little bit of a chunk, but mm-hmm. like this mm-hmm. appropriate for a twin stick internal rotating bezel. It's a cool watch. It's a cool story. If this kind of like techie thing is your jam, like if it was my jam, I'm all for it. Cause this is cool. It's survived space.
You know, I think until pretty recently, India had not the best reputation, at least in terms of the common, the general opinion of the public. But they have emerged in the last handful of years between their automotive manufacturing, pharmaceuticals, just
customer service,
general sort of general, you know. Engineering, chemical, biological production, and then increasingly sort of machining and mechanical manufacturing. India is on the rise.
Like their true, like their homegrown tech industry. Yep,
that's right.
And is
fifth largest economy by GDP and the third largest economy by purchasing power parity in the world today. So India is poised, I think, perhaps even more so than China right now, to really become the next powerhouse in that like upper to mid-level manufacturing prowess. You know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, it was China, China, China. I think that India is actually poised to sort of surpass China.
And it's because of their political leanings. Because they're far more Western aligned than China.
That might be part of it. Mm-hmm. That might be part of it. But I also just think that China's had a rough go of it for any number of reasons, socioeconomic reasons. But India is really, really emerging. And so that's got nothing to do with Bangalore, except that I think Bangalore is evidence of this really emerging, perhaps like boutique manufacturing industry that I think we're going to see more and more. You know, there was a time when Japanese manufacturing was like almost laughable many, many years ago before I was really conscious of the world. But now we think of Japanese manufacturing as like up there with German manufacturing, yeah, right?
It's in the conversation.
And you know, I think India is sort of poised to sort of join that conversation. I don't think they're quite there yet, but well, they're not that far off.
They're making a super clear transition from where you go to get things manufactured cheap.
Yeah.
We manufacture things good.
That's precisely it. Yeah. I think you said it perfectly.
And China kind of, you know, they've carved out their chunk of the market on this is where you send your things to be manufactured cheap. And India has kind of is shaking off that mentality and like, no, we're going to do it better than you. And then we're going to sell it to you.
Andrew, we don't talk about new micro brands often enough. Anymore. We used to talk about new micro brands a lot. And I think as our tastes have evolved and also as the industry has evolved, we talk about that less and less. I was reading on Born and Wound. Born and Wound's still sort of in the space for these things, especially if you've got connections with Born and Wound people. Born and Wound's still very much like bringing new companies to light. Mm-hmm. And I was reading on Born and Wound about a new Brooklyn company called Tool. Have you read about these Tool watches?
I saw it. I have the tab open, but I didn't read it.
So Tool, pronounced Tool, but spelled T-U-U-L.
Tool.
Brand new company. And they've made a watch that they're calling the Filthy 13.
That's why I opened it.
Obviously a play on the Dirty Dozen, and you will not be shocked to learn that this is sort of a Field-y tool watch with an aptly named brand name Tool. I don't want to suggest that this is breaking the mold. This is very much a World War II era looking Field watch. We don't have a bracelet. We're coming on sort of pass-through looking strap thing that is fine, I'm sure. Right? There's not anything about this watch that made me stop and be like, whoa. except backing up and looking at this thing as a whole, I'm like, you know, I'm into this. Screw down crown, drilled lugs, 100 meters of water resistance.
I love a screw down crown on this style of watch.
Me too.
It is it one of the most overlooked and easy to accomplish features of a field watch that make it a better field watch. A field watch without a screw down crown is a sin.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right, Andrew. 46 millimeter lug to lug, 11 millimeters thick, 38 millimeters, 20 millimeter lugs, big old 7 millimeter crown, which is terrific. No crown guards.
Mm-hmm.
And it's under $1,000. It's under $1,000. You know.
SW26 movement or 261 movement.
I'm thinking of a watch that I would compare this to, and I'm a little bit hesitant to say the name because I think I'll probably make someone mad, but I want to compare this a little bit to the Oaken Oscar Olmsted, which for half again as much and with a significantly less attractive dial, I'm taking this all day long. I'm taking it all day long.
I don't like the logo or the font of the
brand. You don't like the tool logo or font.
Mm-mm.
I like them both. And actually, that's my biggest gripe about the Oaken Oscar Olmsted is I don't like any of the fonts. I don't like any of the fonts on that watch.
I like all the fonts on this watch. I don't like the logo.
Okay.
And the font of the brand at the 12 o'clock.
And I don't mean to suggest that this is like an Olmsted clone.
No, it's a Dirty Dozen clone.
That's right.
So here's my bitch. It takes this really classic, really well-known design and nails it.
Nails it. That's my takeaway. They nailed it.
Yeah, they 100% nailed it. But then they put on a 1980s LCD font in tool.
I disagree, but I think it's fine.
It's a big... If they had even lightened the hue of it and pulled it closer to the dial color...
What is that logo? Do you know what that logo is?
It looks like the Rocks bull logo.
I was thinking, is it like a bull skull or something? Like a skull you'd find in the desert?
That's what I just said.
What did you say?
The Rocks bull logo.
Oh,
like Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
I see. I wasn't.
His Brahma bull.
Yeah.
So it looks like to me. He's got a hand in this. That takes away, like, I like everything else, and then I see the logo.
I think the logo is obscure enough that it doesn't bother me, but I can see where you're taking umbrage.
Yeah, the font of the tool at the 12 o'clock yanks this all into new micro brand territory for me.
Slightly recessed subdial for the sub seconds.
But they nailed everything.
I've got no objections about this watch.
And then the logo is a big miss for me.
I do wish it came on a bracelet. That is perhaps my biggest objection to this is
a bracelet's hard to do for a first release. Yeah, can speak. I mean, you know that.
And for a Dirty Dozen watch too. I mean, the Dirty Dozen watch isn't typically. And so I think that they were like, no, we want to do this. We want to do this the way we want to do it. I'm fine with that. But
this has been money on fixed lugs. That's how you make amends for not doing a bracelet.
You do like a fixed lug bar.
Yeah. I do a fixed lug.
Yeah.
The colors on it are good. Two bronze cases with a green and a black dial, a white and a black on steel. They nailed everything. This is a great first release. Workshop your logo a little bit, please. We'd be super happy to talk about options.
Andrew, we're getting long in the tooth.
As we do.
I do think we could do another entry or two, or we could just call it. We could go either way right now. Where are we at? We're at 50 minutes.
Oh, you know what? Let's call it. We're never short on things to talk about.
Hey, you guys, look. It's our show. We'll call it at 50 minutes if we want.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a long week.
It's Wednesday.
God, don't say
hump day. there's other cool shit out there, but these are the things that we felt like talking about, and we felt like talking about them.
You know, there's at least two of these that I think we may get to next week. They're not going anywhere.
Mm-mm.
They're not going anywhere.
They might be going into your living room. Also, in about a week, I will have a new watch alert conversation to have.
I don't even know about this.
Nope.
That's atypical.
Teased.
That's atypical.
Teased.
Andrew. Other things, what do you got?
Okay, so this is a touch of a revisit to other things. It's slightly different than your recommendation.
Recall.
But because I'm coaching a youth sport and they don't pay you, but they do have some partnerships. I got a coupon to the Nike website. I was like, I should use a 40% off coupon. Like, it seems silly not to. Like, it might even be irresponsible not to.
Mm-hmm.
So I got it on. I'm kind of looking, and I'm like, And something popped into my head when you talked about your Nike golf shoes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? Now's the time, because the golf shoes that I wear are perfectly fine. They are unattractive because they are 15 years old. They're mid.
They're trash and awful, but they're fine.
They're mid-aughts golf shoes that have plastic spikes, and they're like the upgraded plastic spikes, so they have the little screw-off, like the flat, pretty flat ones. But they're also like, they're old, and it was time for an upgrade. So I found several pairs that that I liked. I put them to the test. I pulled them out. The strongest voice in the room does not like the Jordan 1 silhouettes. I disagree with your assessment. I really like the Jordan 1 silhouette.
It's like, but the most popular silhouette in tennis shoe history. So many, many people disagree with my assessment.
Yeah, but I also did agree with the general consensus that the Air Max 1 was superior. So today, actually, I got a pair of the Air Max 1 86 OGs in. OGs, because they're golf shoes. In, and I put them on, and I was like, yep.
Bangarang.
Yep. I get it. I agree. They wear exactly like Air Maxes, but they're a touch warm because of their waterproofing technology. So it is a waterproof shoe. They have like a 2-year manufacturer waterproof warranty on them. So they're a little warm, but man, they're just Air Maxes with a little bit of extra traction.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a good recommendation. And I'll second your recommendation. Having not worn them for golf purposes, but having just worn them today, they're Air Maxes that have a greater functionality.
Yeah. I made the switch to, this has been about 3 years ago, I made the switch to like Nike, no spike, Air Max golf shoes. I'm on my second pair. I will never, ever go back to a traditional golf shoe. I never will.
You'll never go back to spikes.
I'll never go back to spikes, nor will I ever go back to a golf shoe that I'm going to feel weird wearing outside of the context of golf.
Mm-hmm.
The way Nike has rolled out their golf line, you've got a stiffened but not stiff sole. You've got...
Yeah, there's just some more structure.
You've got a tread pattern that is plenty grippy without being obnoxious or idiosyncratic. I mean, you could wear these anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They're just sort of nubby,
Yeah.
Rubber soles. I went all white, black swoosh.
Yeah, the all white was, I mean, that's bold, Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
That's bold.
It is.
But get it, girl.
Yeah. I went classic.
They look terrific.
Yeah.
They look absolutely terrific. You're going to love them.
They're a little hot.
But you need to go play golf.
I do. But I'm also going to wear these as like normal sneakers.
You're just going to wear them. Yeah, I like it. I like it. Yeah, like I said, second pair, I'll never go back. I think it's a great, great decision. Andrew, I've got another thing.
Do me.
It's also golf related.
Ooh.
Have I tried to search this today and I couldn't figure it out. I think I talked about one of the Bandon Dunes golf courses on the show as another thing before.
Maybe. I don't know. This is what, 190 episodes?
Yeah, way more than that, Andrew. 290 episodes. Andrew, we've been doing this for 6 years.
Okay. So 290 episodes.
Yeah, exactly 100 more than you said.
A few more than that.
Is this 290? It might be 290. Anyway, we're approaching 300 episodes, which absolutely mind-blowing. So if I've talked about this before, forgive me.
You won't remember because we've been doing this for so long.
Look, if you're into golf and you've got any degree of disposable income, you have to, you must, you thou shalt, thou will come to Oregon and play Bandon Dunes.
Which one? Because there's like, it's a complex.
So it is a complex. I think they are up to 6 courses now. They have everything.
6 distinct links courses.
They have everything from open, airy, and long to incredibly tight and hard to navigate, physically hard to navigate. It is all super fun. It is all incredibly unstuffy. If you Google or if you go to the website and try to figure out what the dress code for Bandon Dunes is, you will not find it.
Because it's a public course.
Because it does not exist. The only thing it says is that denim is discouraged. Casual golf attire with denim being discouraged on the course, but not in the clubhouse. So it is
like, wear your rain pants over your jeans.
And hearing that, you might imagine, this place is sort of, it's a public course. It's a public complex. Anybody can play there. It marries this like casual, not taking itself too seriously attitude with the most excellent golf on the face of the earth.
Because it's on the Oregon coast, right? And the Oregon coast is like
Scotland.
West Virginia on the ocean. So Bandon Dunes has 4 18-hole courses.
Mm-hmm.
They have 2 par threes. One of them is 13 holes. One of them is 19 holes. They're 4 18-hole standard courses, all rank in the top 20 public courses in these United States, with them being at number 7, number 2, number 13, and number 12, and number 15.
Yeah. So I played Old MacDonald, which I think generally is either the third. So just this last week, I played Old MacDonald.
Did he have a dog?
He did. And I think it's probably my favorite of the Bandon courses, although Bandon Dunes comes really close, the OG.
Old MacDonald is a number 12 ranked public course in these United States.
It is absolutely stunning. It is both incredibly difficult and surprisingly playable. I lost a ball the entire round and struggled the entire round. So, you know, a lot of times I'll go out, I'll lose 4 or 5 balls in a round, and I'm like, those ones are gone. So you can play it. You can play from anywhere. You can, you know, if you hit into the gorse, you're screwed. But otherwise, you can find your ball. You can putt from like 150 feet off the green because it's links golf. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy. And here's my other thing. You thought that was my other thing?
I did pull up Banded Dunes as your other thing. Here's, so you just cheated.
Here's my other thing.
Shucker.
Get a caddy.
Oh.
We sprung for a caddy. I went out with one of my law partners, and we sprung for a caddy. His name was Jason. He was 43 years old. Jason, the caddy at Banded Dunes, just a fucking bro. Like, he came out, and I was like, I'm going to like this guy. And he, like, you could tell he's the kind of guy that he could have been five or six different people that day, depending on what was needed. And I think he felt comfortable just being himself with us, which was awesome because our expectations were low. We're like,
who'd you go with?
I went with Connor.
Okay.
And my law partner, Connor. And it was, I mean, I've never done that before. I've never sprung for a caddy. Most places you go don't have caddies. Bannon's got caddies.
They just have like a locker room filled with caddies ready to serve.
Literally.
You. It's like a brothel for caddies.
Literally. Yes. Literally.
Did they do a lineup or did they just send you what you got?
Yeah, you go through, they're all in a line. They're instructed not to make eye contact. Yeah. No, you see we had called ahead. You reserve it. So when you get there, they come and say, "Oh, I'm Jason. Nice to meet you." You know, it's a bit of a luxury. He carried both our bags, right? Which is how they do it. But you know, you get to the shot.
Yeah, because you can't do three person unless they have a four person cart.
No carts.
No carts.
No carts. Yeah.
Yeah. Spring for a caddy.
Yeah, that's right. it was awesome. You know, you get to the place and he's like, "Yeah, I think you ought to do this." You know, and you're like, "Well, what about this?" And they're like, "Well,
listen, man, I've seen you swing. Don't do that. You can't."
Fantastic. You got to get to Oregon and play Banded Dunes. So I think right now they're taking reservations for October 2025. So you have time. Get the next reservation. It's the Oregon coast. It's always 60 degrees, rainy and windy.
Blustering.
Always.
Wind. Like
February, March, July.
Hurricane.
It doesn't strength, matter.
Linear wind.
It's going to be between 60 and 74 degrees. It's slightly damp and windy. Just make a reservation. Make a reservation. Save whatever money you need to get here. It's.
And we'll come meet you.
We'll come meet you. We'll come meet you. Make it for four. Bring your best friend and Andrew and I will join you. It's fantastic. Get to Banded Dunes.
Yeah.
That's my other thing.
I've never played there. Always wanted to.
You never played any of them?
Never played any
of
them.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Banded Dunes, Pacific Dunes, Sheep Ranch, Old McDonald.
Never
played Banded any Trails. Of
them. Had reservations once, but had to cancel.
Stop. Yep. They're so good. Get out there. You've never played there, Andrew?
Never played there.
Jesus.
Never played with a caddy. I did. I was golfing in a pair once. While I was playing at Fort Hood, and we got a third guy assigned to us, and he was fucking old. Like he looked like I wasn't sure how he safely got to the golf course. And he steps up in the tee box and he just like sends a ball into orbit. Like he didn't, that ball wasn't lost. He put it exactly where he wanted it to or where he wanted it to go. But no one could see it. And I was like, holy fucking shit. Which you'd expect from a dude who's been golfing for 80 years. And I get up and I swing and he's like, "All right, here's what you need to do. Try this." And then
he died.
"And then you need to do this." And I was like, "Yes, sir. What? Teach me more." And we get to talking and he's like this old, like, 1950s, retired 06, and just never left Fort Hood because he liked being close to the medical center. But man, I learned a lot golfing with a dude who like really knew what the fuck he was doing.
Yeah.
And man, he could golf.
Yeah.
It's like the only thing he can continue to do well. I'm sure he's dead by now. He might, he maybe died that weekend.
Yeah. Well, he probably did.
Because that guy was fucking old. And he played...
He imparted his knowledge on you and then hung it up.
He played, what, 9, 18, plus 9, 27 holes with us. 3 9-hole courses.
You guys get to Banded Dunes.
Yeah, get to Banded Dunes.
Don't play golf at Fort Hood.
Yeah, don't. It was not great.
But get to Bandon Dunes.
I played that course a lot.
Hey, Andrew, this was fun.
It was okay.
We should do it again next week.
Okay.
Hey, guys. Thanks for joining us. It was kind of weird that you were just sitting there listening to us, but thanks. We'll
contribute next time.
thanks for joining for this episode of 40 and 20 of the Watch Clicker podcast. Do me a favor. Go to our website, watchclicker.com. I had like 17 seltzers while we were recording.
Yeah, you heard them all open.
Watchclicker.com. That's where we post articles, reviews, other things. You can check us out on social media at Instagram, really. At 40 and 20 underscore watch clicker or at watch clicker on the Instagram. If you want to support us and really look, guys, we hope you do. Those of you who are supporting us, we thank you so much. If not, go to patreon.com/40and20 and kick a buck. The folks supporting us are how we keep doing this for nearly 6 years and 300 episodes. Thank you, folks. Keep it coming. And don't forget to tune back in next Thursday for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.